All right, so quick thing here off the top. I've got to retire the term chop boys and chop girls because I was listening to one of our peers' podcasts, the Talking Simpsons podcast. It's a chronological exploration of the Simpsons. And they had special guests on the show from the very popular podcast, Chapo Trap House.
Okay.
And they apparently refer to their listeners as Chapo Boys.
Oh.
So I'm just going to go ahead and retire that one right now. We're going back to Chop Shoppers.
Okay.
Welcome to Cinema Chop Shop. This is a movie podcast that concedes that remakes are going to happen. So why shouldn't movie buffs like us decide who is recast in those iconic roles? My name is The Travis That Binds, and I will be your host. It's not very funny. It's just I worked in my name. And I'm joined, as always, here in the shop by my co-host and co-producer, Memoirs of an Invisible Sean, a.k.a. Hello. The Brew Boss.
Hello.
And in addition, we're extremely excited to welcome back to the show returning guest, Crimes and Chelsea Demeanors.
Nice.
That was probably the funniest one.
I like that one.
Further description of the show is in order. The tagline at the top says, watch, chop, retrofit, because essentially that's what we do here. We watch older movies, sometimes they're classic films with iconic actors, and then we retrofit them by tweaking the design with new parts, aka contemporary actors. And real quick disclaimer, we are not actually in favor of remake culture.
No.
Quit tweeting me about that. It's a work of satire, guys. And with that, we will go ahead and move it into our movie news segment. So speaking of remakes and reboots, we've got a couple of items in movie news this week. The first one is that Tom Hanks is in early talks to play the father slash creator of a lying wooden boy in the live-action remake of Pinocchio. How do you guys feel about that?
No.
I
mean, it's going to happen regardless. Whether or not Tom Hanks stays with the program or with the project, the movie's happening.
Why?
Exactly. Why? So I'm kind of torn on this one. On one hand, it's a remake that is unnecessary. We don't need to make a live-action version of every animation classic.
Right.
Tim Burton. No. On the other hand, it's America's dad, Tom Hanks. And so you know he'll be great.
No.
You know he'll be really good.
He's going to be creepy.
His performance as Geppetto, I think, will probably be really good because he's Tom Hanks.
I don't know. He was pretty bad in that movie, the Spielberg movie that came out last year.
Talking about The Post?
The Post, yeah.
Okay.
I thought it was terrible.
How dare you?
I'm sorry.
On the heels of T. Hanks giving, you are disparaging the name of Tom Hanks. Then we've got another item. I just saw this today. There is an anime spinoff of the Blade Runner franchise that's coming to Adult Swim.
So it's just set in the Blade Runner universe?
Correct.
Okay.
Yes, but you're also going to see some of the characters from Blade Runner make appearances in the show. And that show is going to be called Black Lotus, and it's a series. It's a 13-episode series.
Funny you should bring up Blade Runner today, of all days.
That is interesting. Before we let the cat out of the bag on that one, we want to talk about, for example, how do we feel about anime in general?
Anime is great.
Yeah? What do we think about anime versions of existing properties?
I'm fine with it.
Okay.
I mean, there was some really cool anime treatments of Star Wars years and years ago that were pretty cool. I think, I don't know if it made it to film, but I know in the comics, those were really cool.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, you can have fun with it.
Chelsea, thoughts?
I'm kind of excited to see it.
Okay, cool. So Black Lotus, 13 episodes on Adult Swim, should be interesting. All right, so let's go ahead and get into the Department of Corrections department with Chief Corrections Officer Dana. Take it away, Dana.
You have received a collect call from the Cinema Chop Shot Department of Corrections Department. To accept the charges, please press 1.
Hello, choppers. Officer Dana reporting for duty. Y'all have been angling for some extra time in the yard, except Travis. Travis may get some extra time in the hole for that Brendan Fraser tossed salad and scrambled eggs quip. Ian Somerhalder was Adam Knight on Smallville. Kim, don't feel too bad that you knew the name of the character who replaced Chrissy on Three's Company, because I remembered that her name was Jenny Lee Harrison without having to look it up. As far as things that I'm thankful for, I'm thankful that I've got the keys to the clink and I'm not in a cell, running a cup along the bars and huskily singing, "Nobody knows the trouble I've seen." Hasta luego.
All right, well, I stand by my association between Brendan Fraser and the show Fraser. And we don't know if Brendan Fraser likes tossed salads or scrambled eggs, but he probably has pondered the question, what are we going to do about them? And also, at the beginning of her call, Officer Dana said duty. And so I'm going to be laughing about that in the hole. Duty in the hole. All right. So that will shut the doors on the Department of Corrections for this week. And we'll go ahead and get into the theme of our episode, right? In honor of her upcoming 58th birthday, which is on December 3rd, we're talking about the films of Daryl Hannah. Or should I say Daryl Hannah Young? Right?
Yes. Yep.
That's a recent development.
It is.
Apparently, she and Neil Young tied the knot back in August, and he confirmed it publicly in October.
And so I'm assuming that they've been dating since they were marching together against the pipeline.
I would imagine something like that. They're both very active politically.
Yep.
Political activists and environmental activists as well.
Right.
Which is something that's very admirable about both of them. I will say, though, that if you Google Daryl Hannah Young, you're going to get varying results on your Google search. Either, you know, pictures of 20-year-old Daryl Hannah or pictures of old Daryl Hannah and old Neil Young. Okay. So what do you guys think about Daryl Hannah?
I don't know.
You don't know how you feel about her?
I like her.
I mean, yeah? Like, yeah, she's all right. She rubbed me the wrong way because not in a movie. Just
in real life.
In real life.
You ran into her.
Yep. No.
Where did the tall lady touch you?
Show us on the doll.
Oh, God. No, she came out like a few years ago saying that she was autistic.
Oh, okay. I think I read something about this. Yeah. Like undiagnosed childhood autism, something like that. I'm not a doctor, so who am I to say? But we will admit that there are a lot of different levels to the spectrum of autism, right?
Oh, of course.
But beyond that, in terms of her acting ability and her presence in cinema.
I like her. I think she's very sweet and very beautiful, obviously. I've always considered that she has kind of a limited range.
Okay.
And maybe it's because I haven't seen her full body of work,
if you know what I mean.
Hey, I've seen a lot of her body though. Hey-o! Just tall, statuesque, beautiful woman. And, she's maintained her good looks, I think, through her later years.
Yeah. I feel like she's always kind of been a fixture, at least like in terms of, my life. She's been on the screen and famous my whole life. So I feel like she's just kind of always been there. A staple of 80s comedies. Pretty cool figure and actress. All right, so what else should we say about Daryl Hannah before we get into our first feature segment?
I got nothing.
All right, so no, not our first feature segment. Our first segment, which is the Midnight Double Feature. This is where we go around the panel and we each talk about two movies that we would pair together that are related to the theme of the episode and at least, you know, partially or spiritually related to each other in some way. Who wants to go first with their double feature?
I'll go.
All right, sounds good. Chelsea, what are you thinking?
I'm going to do Kill Bill Volume 1 and 2.
Oh, it is a double feature. That's awesome.
It is.
It was made to be so.
Daryl Hannah wears an eye patch, and it's pretty cool.
L Driver.
Yep.
And she also whistles that song in the in the hallway. That one?
Yeah, that one.
And so which of the two volumes did you prefer? Just in general or also her character?
I like them both together. Mm-hmm. completes the story.
Yeah, definitely. So an interesting fun fact about Kill Bill volumes 1 and 2 is that in the first film, almost all of the deaths, like hundreds of deaths, are completed with the sword. And in the second film, there's no deaths by sword. Go back and check it out.
I'm going to now.
All right. Sean, how about your double feature tonight?
All right. So my double feature feature the wonderful nudity of Daryl Hannah.
Booby count coming up.
Big booby count. I'm starting with 1982's Summer Lovers.
Okay.
This is a film starring Daryl and Peter Gallagher and Valerie Quenessin.
Okay.
It's about a young American couple and a French woman who engage in a threesome in the Greek islands.
Okay. I think I have seen this.
There's tons and tons of nudity.
Yeah.
And you get to see little
Peter. But it's all Peter Gallagher.
You get to see little Peter Gallagher, too. And yes, his dingus has the little eyebrows just like he does.
Oh, good.
No, seriously, it's a feast for the eyes if you're into naked people.
Okay.
And
I am.
But also, it's about a couple. They're kind of doing that typical 80s white privilege thing of touring Europe kind of deal. And so they're spending a lot of time.
And leaving their inhibitions back home.
Boy, do they. Well, they also encounter this French woman who Peter Gallagher kind of gets the hots for her, but very soon she's introduced to Daryl Hannah's character, and they kind of explore their boundaries of their relationship.
So does a little bit of like third wheel action happen to Peter Gallagher?
Oh yeah,
gotcha.
Yeah. There's a lot of those dimensions are in
those
this movie.
Pitfalls that happen when you open Pandora's box.
Oh, and it's got a great soundtrack.
Oh, really?
It's so good.
Pointer Sisters, I'm so excited.
Oh, nice.
Is used a little bit on the nose.
Yeah.
But also, there are a few other like well-known songs in this soundtrack.
Very cool.
So I recommend checking it out. So I'm following that up with... that was like the early 20s. I guess she was like about 22. So I'm going with the 40-year-old version of Daryl Hannah naked with Dancing at the Blue Iguana.
Okay. Now, I have not seen this one. Tell me the basic premise.
This film came out in 2000. It's a very non-glamorous portrayal of the lives of people who make their living at a strip club.
Okay.
But I mentioned, you know, the nudity of Daryl Hannah. She is ripped as 40-year-old Daryl Hannah.
Okay.
You could bounce a quarter off her belly.
Yeah. And then wash your clothes on those washboard abs.
Yeah, but it also has Jennifer Tilly in it.
I like
very
her.
Naked.
Yeah.
And surprise, surprise, Sandra Oh.
Huh.
Very, very naked in this movie.
Interesting.
So I mean, just I know it seems kind of very base to use this as a kind of a double feature, but these nudity figures very prominently in both of these films. So I just kind of use that as my jumping off point.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear that last part because I was frantically writing myself a note to watch Dancing at the Blue Iguana. All right, so my double feature is one film from 1986 and one film from 1993. They've got a few different things that tie them together beyond the fact that they both star Daryl Hannah. And they both have pretty low ratings on Rotten Tomatoes. One is a 10%, one is a 22%. They also have a similar theme. And before revealing the two movies, I'll say that I think that the common theme they have is at the very least, tacit theme of feminism and female empowerment. Okay, so the first movie in my double feature is from 1986. It only has a 10% on Rotten Tomatoes. And I'm talking about Clan of the Cave Bear.
And we've spoken about this before.
I like this movie.
I do too.
I read the book also as a kid. And so that might, because I was, you know, like 13 or 14 and reading about these pretty graphic prehistoric sex scenes.
I think I used it as my double feature half in the Caveman episode.
Caveman movie.
And I call her the world's first feminist.
Gotcha. Very good. And so she's a... Cro-Magnon woman in a Neanderthal world, and they just can't handle what she's laying down, and she gets exiled. And it's really about her trials and tribulations after being exiled and having to have a baby on her own in the wild.
I maintain that this would be an excellent candidate for a remake.
Okay.
I really do, because it's, like you said, you've read the book, and there's a lot more beneath the surface.
Yeah, and there's multiple books in that series,
right?
Too.
So I think that somebody could have a lot of fun, almost in a like a caveman Game of Thrones kind of way.
Yeah.
You could really get into the lore of those books and really stretch that thing into like maybe a three movie kind of
like a mini series,
like a trilogy or something. Yeah,
gotcha. All right, and so then, keeping with the theme of female empowerment, I went with 1993's Attack of the 50-Foot Woman. Now, this is a remake itself.
Right.
A remake of a 1950s film. And technically, this is kind of cheating because it was an HBO movie. It was not released theatrically. It was just straight to HBO. But you've got this this woman who is in a not-so-great relationship. Her husband's a philanderer and is always cheating on her. He's played by Daniel Baldwin, I believe. Daniel Baldwin? Yeah, one of the Baldwins. It's not Stephen. It's either William or Daniel.
Okay.
And then she is like a trust fund baby. And she stands to inherit a great deal of money from her father. And her husband is always kind of angling for that money. And then one day she has an experience where she encounters a UFO. And because of that encounter with the UFO, this is not a spoiler because it's the title of the movie, she grows to a height of 50 feet and has to kind of deal with this sudden change. But also it's a metaphor for her realizing her self-worth and the fact that she doesn't have to deal with this man who's obviously cheating on her. She's in complete denial about that up until this point. And also, she can't really find clothes that fit. So the clothes that she like throws together kind of look like a caveman lady, a cave lady outfit. So that's my third,
connection
there. So yeah, Clan of the Cave Bear, excuse me, The Clan of the Cave Bear. The book was had no the at the front. And then Attack of the 50-Foot Woman from 1993. I think you could also arguably pair the original Attack of the 50-Foot Woman with the remake and see how they compare and contrast. So that's those are our double features. Everybody
I like all of them. I think those are all fun.
All right, so let's get into our feature segment now, which is the recast. And movie number one, I feel like, is what she will always kind of be known for. Like her main movie that she's known for came out in 1984. It was directed by Ron Howard. It's got a 90% on Rotten Tomato and it's called Splash. I remember seeing this when it came out, really loved it. Upon rewatching it, I did not remember the flashback scenes being in sepia tone. Yeah, I did not remember that at all. I guess just because in my memory from 1984, everything's already in sepia tone because I'm flashing back in my mind, right? That's probably why.
I wasn't alive in 1984.
And so it's a mermaid story. You've got, well, in the opening sequence, the flashback scene, you've got young Alan Bauer who's on a ship. They're taking a tour on like a ferry and they're looking to see Cape Cod. Is that right? Alan, you're going to miss Cape Cod.
Yeah.
Right? And so he ends up falling overboard and encounters this young mermaid. Later thinks he imagined it, goes on to live his life, only to encounter her once again later in life, once they're both adults. So the mermaid is played by Daryl Hannah, of course. Alan Bauer is played by Tom Hanks. He was 28 at the time. His brother, Freddie Bauer is portrayed by John Candy. And then we've got the great Eugene Levy playing Dr. Walter, not Corn Bush.
Corn Bluth.
Corn Bluth. Listeners, I literally wrote down Corn Bush. Corn doesn't even grow on a bush. But it's also a derogatory term for an
Iowa girl.
An Iowa girl. The old Corn Bush. All right. So what else do we need to say about the movie itself?
It's a lot of fun.
It's a lot of fun, yeah. And Eugene Levy is the kind of meddling researcher who's convinced that this mermaid is real and wants to prove to everybody that he's not crazy.
Yeah, and then he lives to regret it.
It ends up backfiring on him. We probably shouldn't reveal that whole twist yet,
sure.
Right? We'll leave it up to the viewers. If they've not seen this movie, go back, watch it. Tell us what you think of it. All right, so let's get into the recasting of this bad boy. I want to go first.
Go.
With mine. All right. My Madison, which isn't really...
Oh, we starting with Madison?
Okay. Yeah, yeah. We'll start with Daryl Hannah. Okay. She plays Madison, but that's not her real name. Her real name cannot be pronounced or understood by human ears. And so she gets the name off of Madison Avenue when she's out exploring New York. And so my first actress, you know, Daryl Hannah was, of course, as you mentioned, Chelsea, she played L Driver. Mm-hmm. Is it Ellie or L?
I think it's Ellie.
Ellie Driver in the Kill Bill duo of films. And also, this actress is going to be in the upcoming Quentin Tarantino film, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. And her mother was also in Kill Bill. I'm talking about Maya Hawke. Maya Hawke is the daughter of Uma Thurman and Ethan Hawke.
Wow.
Yeah. So she's in the 2017 version of Little Women. She's also going to be in the upcoming season 3 of Stranger Things. And like I said, she's going to play a flower child in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Cool.
Maya Hawke is 20 now, as opposed to the 24 of Daryl Hannah in this, but I think it's still ballpark.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. So, You're not participating in the recast.
She's just going to talk shit to us.
If something jumps in your mind, uh-huh, please speak up and jump in, but I'll just keep going.
Do raise your hand, though.
Yes. All right, so my pick is 22.
Okay.
And she was in a Nickelodeon series called Supa Ninjas.
Supa.
Ninjas.
S-U-P-A.
And she's currently in the CBS series Zoo.
Okay.
She plays Clementine Lewis in that. Her name is Gracie, and I'm going to butcher this name because it's D-Z-I-E-N-N-Y. I guess it's Zienny or Zini. But I generally do not go on face value, but when you see this, you're going to lose your shit.
Oh, wow. She does look like a young Daryl Hannah. Not to be confused with Daryl Hannah Young. Is Supa Ninjas a cooking show about blenders?
No, I think they're superheroes who happen to be ninjas as well.
All right.
But there you go. I mean, she's, look her up, folks.
Yeah.
She is a dead ringer. It's insane.
I like it. Okay, next up, we've got the kind of everyman, Tom Hanks. He goes on to, after having this strange encounter as a child, he goes on to live kind of an ordinary life that he's not really super happy in. 28 at the time, playing Alan Bauer. And you know that I have shopped his son, Colin Hanks, many, many times.
It's low-hanging fruit.
And it is. However, Colin Hanks is too old now
exactly.
for any of these early Tom Hanks roles. However, his other son, Chet Hanks, is not.
Oh, gosh.
Chet Hanks is...
Oh, my God.
He looks like 28 now.
He looks like the dude from The Office.
Yeah, he does. A little bit less lanky. So Chet Hanks was in Larry Crown in 2011. He's also on the TV show Empire. And he's in Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull. So solid body of work. And I think he's going to have a lot of fun remaking one of his father's fondest memories.
He looks like Tom Hanks's evil twin.
A little bit. Yeah, a little bit. Or he looks like, okay, so you remember Big?
Yeah.
You know, the kid in Big?
Yeah.
When he grows up, that's who that guy looks like.
Nice. He just looks like the evil version. Mm-hmm. I don't like it. I don't like him.
Gotcha. All right, what about yours?
Okay,
who's going to be your Alan Bauer,
so this, Sean? This is going to be an odd... My picks for the brothers are kind of strange, but they'll make sense in a second. My actor is 30 years old,
uh-huh,
and he is from Ireland. He has been in a few films. He was in Geostorm.
Oh, okay.
But don't let that fool you. He was great in the BBC series Misfits.
Haven't seen it.
In the early seasons. And most recently, he is in Mortal Engines.
Oh, Mortal Engines hasn't come out yet. I want to see it.
He plays the character of Tom Natsworthy. He's very funny.
Okay.
If you've ever watched Misfits, you'll know he's got comedy chops, drink. But his name is Robert Sheehan.
Oh, okay.
Robert Sheehan.
Now, isn't there an older movie called The Misfits? like maybe one of Professor Knowles' favorite movies.
Yeah, I think yeah.
Something
well,
like
there's
that.
A band called The Misfits.
Dude. Yeah, there's that.
But, oh my god. But anyway, check this out on BBC if you've never watched it. I think it streams on lots and lots of things, and.
Thank you, sir. Sounds good. I like it. So now we go on to the brother. He's a real Freddy bear. He is 34. I didn't realize that John Candy was 6 years older than Tom Hanks.
Doesn't surprise me.
And he's more of a hot-tempered wild card in this film.
I love his intro in the movie. He pulls up in the sports car, yeah. And he's gotten his letter published in Penthouse magazine, uh-huh. And he has these two armfuls of Penthouse. He's handing them out to people at the produce place where they both work.
All right, so if you haven't picked up on my theme yet, you're going to in a minute, because this actor was in a movie called Contracted. He's also in something called In a Relationship, which I think might be a TV show. But his name is Christopher Candy, and he's John Candy's son, Christopher Candy. Yeah.
I like it.
Uh-huh. And that's all I got. He's John Candy's son. Okay.
He doesn't look like the evil twin version of John Candy.
No, he looks a lot. He looks like the nice version.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's the nice twin.
Yeah.
All right. So my pick is 34 years old.
Okay.
He is from Lancashire, England, and he is from the TV series This Is England.
Is it about soccer hooligans?
I think so. He is currently, I'm not going to give that one away, that'll give it away. He appeared in the TV show Misfits as well.
Hmm. Oh my gosh.
He was the later season replacement, not the same character, but when Sheehan left the show,
okay.
He was introduced as the character Rudy Wade, a little bit of a mischievous troublemaker.
Was he offsides?
No. No. I got your reference.
Thank you.
It wasn't necessary. But everyone knows him now from the AMC TV series Preacher. He is playing the character Cassidy.
Yeah.
His name is Joseph Gilgan.
Okay.
So he is going to be the older brother.
Nice. So he's not the main dude on Preacher.
No, he's the vampire.
Okay, gotcha.
The wisecracking vampire.
Wait, there's vampires on that show?
Yeah.
I gotta check out Preacher.
I have no idea any of the shows you've been talking about.
So Preacher is a TV show on AMC that's based on a comic book. It's about this, he's a preacher with a dark past who has to battle supernatural forces.
Who comes into power of the voice, the word of God, practically. And he can make
the Bible.
He can bend people to his will.
Oh.
The word of God is the Bible.
And there's a lot of family. What are you saying? I'm sorry. I'm not even listening
to you. The word of God is a Bible.
I'm not even listening to you.
Okay. So that's your Freddie Bauer.
Yep.
Okay. All right. So.
So let me guess what you picked.
No, don't guess.
Levy.
Don't guess. Don't guess. For Dr. Walter Cornbush, I have, who was originally portrayed by Eugene Levy. He was 38 at the time. I've got an actor who is in a movie called Admission from 2013. He's also in A Very Harold and Kumar Christmas. And most recently, he's on a show that, Sean, you've mentioned recently as well, called Schitt's Creek. It's Dan Levy. Dan Levy is Eugene's acting son, also a Levy. So I actually changed this one.
Okay.
I originally picked the Pie Fucker.
Oh.
From American Pie.
Gotcha.
Jason Biggs. Yeah. I originally picked Jason Biggs, and then I realized that Eugene Levy has a son who is an actor and who looks a lot like him. So I went with that.
I love it.
Yeah.
That's funny. I went with an actor who is 38 years old. He has been in the film A Serious Man in the role of Rabbi Scott.
Okay.
He has been in, he does a lot of voice work. People with kids, I wish Hillary was here tonight because Kung Fu Panda, Legends of Awesomeness.
Okay.
Uh-huh, yeah.
I have a child. Yes. I've seen it.
You've seen it? Okay.
Yeah.
And DSS isn't even knocking on her door.
I loved him in Dr. Horrible's Sing Along Blog as the villain Moist.
Okay.
Oh, God.
But everyone probably knows him from his famous role on Big Bang Theory as Howard Wolowitz. I'm talking about Simon Helberg.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he could totally do that. So he was the villain in Dr. Horrible.
Well, he was like the sub villain.
It's been a little while. Moist since was that
his
came out.
Powers. Stop saying
his
that.
Powers. He had the powers of Moist.
Ew. Are you one of the people who doesn't like the word Moist?
I don't like it.
Okay. Now, is it just the sound of the word, like phonetically, or is it the evocative images that it brings about?
No, it's phonetically. The sound of it is awful.
Gotcha.
It's like styrofoam.
All right. Oh. So real quick, I really like this movie.
That's a great film. A
childhood classic. There was a lot of stuff that kind of went over my head seeing it as a kid, that going back and watching it now, I was like,
little subtle things. Like when she's in the at Bloomingdale's and she's working out in front of the TV screen, they're trying to close the store. And the guy's like, just let it work out. Yeah, you know? And I'm like, okay, I get that now.
Very cool. So anything else we need to say about Splash?
No.
All right. So that will go ahead. Oh, I was going to say that if they remade it, they should call it Sploosh. All right. So that will wrap up the first part of our feature segment, and we will go into the intermission. But first we have to say,
let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby and get ourselves some
Swedish fish and goldfish crackers.
Oh, until you bite their heads off. All right, Cinema Chop Shoppers, this is your host, Travis, just chiming in here at intermission to remind you about our online presence. We are on Facebook. We're facebook.com/cinemachopshop. We post things about upcoming episodes as well as the Chop Shopper Challenge, where you, the listeners, can pick some roles to recast yourselves. We're also on Twitter. We do some similar things on there. The Chop Shopper Challenge check-ins. We are at Cinema Chop Shop on Twitter. If you ever want to comment on the show, that would be a good place to do it, as well as our email address. We are cinemachopshop@gmail.com. And we take suggestions for future episodes and any sort of commentary on the show. If you have corrections, if you notice some things that I say that might not necessarily be true, please let us know about that, because we do, the Department of Corrections Department. Once again, thank you, the listeners, for bearing with us during the intermission, and thank you for listening to the show. Remember, you can rate, review, and subscribe to us on iTunes, or like us on whatever platform it is that you listen to your podcasts. And also, please remember to watch, shop, retrofit. And we're back! All right, Chop Shoppers, I failed to mention during the Midnight Double Feature segment that the Attack of the 50-Foot Woman was directed by Christopher Guest, the great kind of auteur director of Best in Show and...
Mighty Wind.
A Mighty Wind.
Spinal and Tap.
Mascots and Spinal Tap and many other great kind of subtle comedic films. But... when we come back from intermission, we like to do a beer check-in.
I drank beer with my friends. Sometimes I had too many beers. I liked beer. I still like beer. Had beers, have some beers. One beer, drink beer, drinks beer, drank beer, and drinking beer.
So what's our first beer going to be today, Sean?
We're going to start with a Fanta Flora beer.
Okay.
Sort of on theme, since the moon played a bit of a role in Splash. She had to get back home before the full moon. It's called Break of Moon, and this is a... quenchable, crushable fruit beer with local black raspberries.
Ooh. It's so good.
Okay. He just opened it. How do you know already?
Because I have had this before.
You're literally wearing a Fanta Flora shirt.
Because it's my fave.
You're repping.
There you go.
Thank you.
All right. So we're gonna try a taste of that. And while we do that, we will continue with the next segment, which is our 2018 movie marathon. And guess what, you
guys? Big news, everybody.
Your host, Travis, finally crossed that finish line. It's all downhill from here. I hit 365 this past week, and I'm real happy about it. It is the 334th day of the year, so well ahead of the deadline. And I'm on number 367 as of this recording. Sean, what is your first check-in for the movie marathon tonight.
All right, I'm going to, since I know all of yours are current films, mm-hmm. I'm going to go ahead and do some flashback films. These are the last three from the current season of MST3K,
okay.
The Gauntlet. I'm going to start with The Day Time Ended, 1979. This is what happens when you convert a home to solar power. It's got awful stop-motion animation, exposition, and extended shots. Just a terrible, terrible film about a family that ends up in Arizona, New Mexico-ish area.
The Southwest.
And, these aliens start screwing around with time, and there's some bad stop-motion animation that makes no sense whatsoever. Hmm. And it's just terrible. That's all I can say.
Okay. Well, my first check-in for tonight was number 364. It's called Hotel Artemis. Hotel Artemis stars Jodie Foster as a kind of criminal doctor who runs an underground hospital for, criminals, low lives who can't be caught at a regular hospital. It's got a great ensemble cast. You've got Jodie Foster, you've got Dave Bautista, you've got Jeff Goldblum. Unfortunately, I said, falls a bit short of expectations considering the tremendous ensemble cast. So the sum of the parts was greater than the whole. Mm-hmm. Do I have that right?
Yeah.
It had the potential to be a really kind of cool grinder of a movie, and didn't quite get there. There was some moments. Jeff Goldblum's always good. He plays the wolf, who's like the crime boss of Los Angeles.
Was this supposed to be like an Oscar buzz movie?
I don't think so.
Okay.
I think it came out a little bit too early in the year for it to have been a contender. But maybe when they first started making it, maybe they wanted to. But then, you know, sometimes as it goes, they do their test screenings and they do festivals and whatnot. And they're like, oh, maybe we're not going to promote this one quite so much.
Got it.
And McJunkin, shout out McJunkin, warned me ahead of time. He was like, it was okay, but I still wanted to see it. So
I guess
that was my 364.
Cool. Next up for me is from 1979, a film called Killer Fish. It's a ripoff of Piranha.
Yeah.
Lee Majors is the star.
Oh, huh. Gosh.
$6 million man is the star of this, and it's pretty lousy.
Is there, do they get into like practical effects with the fish?
No.
So what year is it?
79.
79. So it would have to be practical effects.
It's all
effects.
Practical effects. It's, you know, people jump in the water and all of a sudden a big balloon of blood comes out.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's entirely derivative of the Piranha films that were so popular at that time.
And so once again, this is one that you saw the
on the MST3K.
MST3K.
Well, what's even worse about this though is that the killer fish were an engineered threat. Like there was this really shitty rich guy who's like populating the lake with these piranha.
Okay.
Because he was just an asshole.
Were they actual piranha?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, they weren't like super mutants or anything. Huh. They're just piranha, but he's like, I'm gonna put piranha in my lake.
You can't copyright piranhas.
Nope.
All right.
There you go.
My next one is number 365. This was a movie called First Man. And it's a Christian film about Adam in the Garden of Eden. And I swear to Christ, it's the best thing I've ever seen. No, it is a movie about Neil Armstrong, the first man on the moon, starring Ryan Gosling. It's the more historical of the several astronaut movies that are being released this year. Gosling plays it fairly low-key, but Claire Foy plays his wife, and she is outstanding as usual. She's on that recent show about Queen Elizabeth II. Is it called The Queen?
It literally is called
The Queen. Yeah, she's on that. It was all right.
I watched it too, and I felt that a lot of it reminded me of rewatching The Right Stuff. Because there's a lot of historical test flight footage and stuff. But I thought they really nailed it with the quiet enormity of his first step on the moon.
Yeah.
Like they go dead silent, no sound in space, and that foot just plops down ever so slowly.
And then Stanley Kubrick yells, cut.
Cut!
All right.
So my final film is from 1982. in the glut of sword and sorcery films around that time. Mm. This one's called Ator, the Fighting Eagle.
Oh, wait a minute. Somebody talked to me about this tonight.
Oh, really?
Dave at the sushi bar was like, do you remember that barbarian craze of the late 70s? You guys should do an episode about barbarians. There's this movie called Ator, the Fighting Eagle.
Yep.
I cannot believe you just brought that
up.
It's awful. That's crazy.
It is. It's a stinker. I mean, it's a sword and sorcery B-movie with tons of walking and running around and bad sword fights. And I mean bad sword fights. Like, I'm going to swing at you now, and I'm going to block you now.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's a barbarian who's got a birthright that he just finds out about. And it's like, you've had this tattoo right here
the whole time.
Movie. And you just, you know, no, it's bad. It's just awful.
So if it was a birthright, why would you have to get a tattoo about it?
You know, I'm sure
should have been a birthmark.
I'm sure somebody had their reasons.
So we haven't done a Barbarian Movies episode, but we did talk about Conan the Barbarian on one.
Well, that was the Grace Jones.
Ah, that's right. That's
but
right.
We should do. We should do Beastmaster and Crawl.
Yeah.
Well, Crawl wasn't really a barbarian, but it did come out around the same time.
I think that would be fun. I think we'll have to work that in. All right. My last one for this week is number 367. And it's called The House with the Clock in Its Walls from 2018. And I did not read your review before I reviewed it, but I said, a very good Harry Potter movie. And then I said, a major departure from Eli Roth's usual work. He's the director of Green Inferno and various other horror projects.
Yeah.
Known for like being really... really off-putting in his subject matter, and this was not that.
This is pretty family-friendly.
Yeah.
I saw this as well. I said it was like Homeschool Hogwarts.
Right, right.
Oh, wow.
But it's very derivative of all of these other films. Mm-hmm. It felt like I was watching Mrs. Peregrine's meets Hogwarts.
Mrs. Penguin.
There's even a... not really a talking chair, a barking chair. So it was a lot like Pee-wee's Playhouse. Mm-hmm. And so there were some really strange things. And Jack Black plays this character like he's wearing a male girdle the whole time.
Yeah. It's a kimono.
It's kind of strange. And yeah, Blanchett was... she was, you know, she brings it, but it's just, I don't know. It's just, there's something missing in this movie. And I think it was just because it was so derivative of everything else.
Gotcha.
Cash grab.
And so that will wrap us up on the 2018 movie marathon for this week. I'm gonna keep checking in, but the pressure's kind of off.
The pressure's off, isn't it?
I can be a little bit more selective about what I watch, and
it's a good feeling.
Yeah, it is. It's nice.
All right, before we jump into the next,
segment, I wanted to say I really like this.
You like that?
It's so good, right?
Well, I'm gonna jump in. This is a completely blind tasting because I've never heard of these guys. But I got Hoppadelic Kool-Aid, and that's spelled K-E-W-L-A-I-D.
Should have had some of that for Halloween.
And it's from Studio Brew out of Bristol, Virginia. This is in the southwestern tip of Virginia.
Shout out to previous guest on our Evolution movies, Professor Knowles. Yeah. We're going to have to get him back on the show.
Yeah, he comes from those hills of southwestern Virginia.
Sean just slammed the entire pint of beer in front of us.
Sorry, guys.
We didn't even get
incredible.
To...
you don't get to try it. Sorry.
I mean, we're not even mad. It's just impressive.
Mm-hmm.
I can't believe you ate a whole wheel of cheese. All right. So while we are tasting this Hoppadelic Kool-Aid, we're going to move into the second part of our feature segment. The recast continued.
Part two.
The sequel.
Redux.
And for this one, it is a movie from 1987 called Roxanne. And it was directed by a guy named Fred Schapizzi. And it has an 89% on Rotten Tomatoes. I was looking into Fred Schapizzi's other work, and he's got a couple of standouts. He did The Russia House with Sean Connery.
Yeah.
And then also, he directed Fierce Creatures, which is a spiritual sibling to A Fish Called Wanda.
Nice.
The most of the cast from A Fish Called Wanda come back for Fierce Creatures.
And this film is an adaptation of a play by Edmund Rostand, and screenplay was written by Steve Martin.
Cyrano de Bergerac.
Oh, yeah.
Steve Martin wrote the screenplay much earlier in his career, and it didn't get developed until 87. But the basic premise is the basis of the play, so no real spoilers here. You've got a local fire chief, and he is he's charismatic and he's charming, if a bit aloof, but also very self-conscious about his abnormally long nose, right? There's a soliloquy or a speech that he does in the movie that's almost directly from Cyrano de Bergerac. And then we've got the young, beautiful Roxanne, played by Daryl Hannah, who comes to town. She's an astronomer, and she's trying to discover a new comet. Yeah, discover a new comet. And so upon her arrival in this small town, everybody is immediately attracted to her, including C.D. Bales is our main character's name, which is a subtle nod to Cyrano de Bergerac, including one of his underlings in the firehouse, the young, dumb firefighter Chris, who was played by Rick Rossovich. And so the dynamic between the two is that even though Steve Martin's CD character is in love basically with Roxanne, he is uncomfortable approaching her, but he's really good with words. She, on the other hand, is attracted to the hunky Chris, but Chris is too dumb and feels intimidated to talk to her. So they team up using Steve Martin's words and Chris's good looks to try and woo
his
Roxanne.
Worms.
Yes, his worms.
Worms.
And it's kind of like Steve Martin is living vicariously through this intermediate. He can't bring himself to say what he wants to say to her in person, but he can say them to be quoted.
It's a cute movie.
It is.
It's a well-done movie. It's got a great supporting cast. Shelley Duvall's in it. Fred Willard's in it as the mayor.
Yes. There's a funny joke. I can't remember if Steve Martin is saying it about himself self-deprecatingly or if somebody says it to him. It might be one of the two drunks in the opening scene. But anyway, the line is, referring to his nose, "Your name wouldn't happen to be Dick, would it?"
Yes.
Because it's a very phallic-shaped
It's a great nose. Opening sequence with the tennis racket.
Kevin Nealon is one of those drunk guys
so
that he gets
good.
In a fight with. All right, so let's go ahead and recast this movie. First up, we've got Steve Martin playing C.D. Bales. He was 42 at the time. Daryl Hannah was only 27, pretty big age difference there. You want to go first on this round?
Yeah, I can go first. They give you time to get your screen advanced to where you like it. So in considering this role, I wanted to cast someone, but I don't want to step on your toes if you've...
No, go ahead.
I wanted to cast Bill Hader, but I recently used him. But I thought Bill Hader would be
perfect
for this part.
He would be good in this.
But I went with somebody who's also a great comedian and a great writer as well. He's 40 years old, and I've used him once before, so I don't think it's too out of bounds for me to use him again. But he's from The League. He's from Sausage Party. He's from Big Mouth. It's Nick Kroll.
Ah, yeah,
I think
Nick Kroll
would be good in this part because he is kind of good at playing the downtrodden
I was so
character.
Hoping you were going to say Jason Mantzoukas.
What's up, jerks?
He would be good. No, I like Nick Kroll, and he can be kind of aloof, but also charming and hilarious.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so my guy is a little bit more on the aloof side. He is a comedic actor. He was in The Strangers that was filmed right here in Florence, but most people would know him from a little TV show in its 13th season on FX called It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. I went with Glenn Howerton.
Okay.
Glenn Howerton
okay.
is
nice.
Going to be my C.D. Bales. And I don't really have a theme for this round. I mostly just either went face value or character traits.
What else has he done besides Sunny?
He's only been in a couple of movies. He's done Always Sunny, and then he was in a short-lived TV show called AP Bio with Patton Oswalt.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, good company.
Mm-hmm.
Cool.
All right. Who do you have for the beautiful Roxanne?
The beautiful Roxanne.
You don't have to wear that dress tonight.
What's funny about this actress, she is 30. And she's from Australia. And she, if she were younger, I would have cast her for Splash because she's been in 47 Meters Down, an undersea adventure. Uh-huh. She's also been in H2O, Just Add Water, a mermaid movie.
Is an undersea adventure the subtitle of
47? No.
Okay.
I'm just giving you, it's underwater, not underground.
But you know, the sequel's called 94 Meters Down.
But she, and I can't believe this show was on the air until just this year. It wrapped up on CW, The Originals. She plays Rebecca Mickelson. Her name is Claire Holt.
Oh, wow.
Another face value.
Very much so. Wow. She's got a major Daryl Hannah thing going on.
She's great.
Yeah? And what was that show you said she's on?
The Originals.
And what network
is
that?
CW. It's like a spinoff of Vampire Diaries.
Okay. Nice. All right. I like that. Mine is fairly, I won't say unknown, but I didn't know of her very well. She's had some small parts in movies like Hacksaw Ridge, I Am Number 4, and Warm Bodies. But the main reason I picked her is because she's a beautiful blonde with curly blonde hair. Her name is Teresa Palmer. Teresa Palmer is 32 now, so I'm closing that age gap a little bit between her and my CD Bales. So, Kim, if you're listening, I picked her mostly because she's pretty.
I love that. That was my favorite part of the last week's episode.
She literally kicked me from over there.
She was kicking you. I know, right?
All right. Next up, we've got our third and final role. In not the final role, but the third one that we're going to be recasting, the pretty but dumb firefighter who can't really swing a relationship with an intellectual.
No,
he wants to, but he's too intimidated. And Roxanne realizes that all the things that she really likes about this guy are the parts that CD was.
Right.
Was performing,
right?
The intellectual parts, right? Who is going to be your Chris, the fireman?
First, I want to say a few things about Rick Rossovich, by the way. I mean, he was Slider in Top Gun.
Yeah, that's true. He was.
he was also in the TV show Pacific Blue.
Oh, about the bicycle cops?
Bicycle cops, gotcha. Exactly. And he's had a very long career, and I think he's even in something now on television. So the guy's, and he's still a handsome man.
I think they're Metamucil ads.
No, he's a good-looking guy, so those good looks have lasted. So I went with someone who is equally handsome, and I don't think there's much going on beneath the surface, mm-hmm. but if I meet him, I'll change my tune. Because he could probably kick my ass with one of his pinky fingers. He was in San Andreas. He was in the MTV Teen Wolf. He was in Rough Night. But I know him from the CW show Arrow, the Green Arrow show. He plays Roy Harper, the younger protege of Green Arrow. His name is Colton Haynes.
Colton Haynes, yeah.
Okay.
I think that I've chopped him before.
I'm going to hand this to Chelsea. I want her to look at this picture in particular there.
All right, so...
You could grate cheese on his abs. That's how ripped he is.
Can I have this?
You can have that.
Yes, that's yours. He's done with it now. Do not bother returning it. Please dispose of your soiled notes. So my Rick Rossovich, the role Chris, I also went with somebody who was, you know, really good looking, but also just kind of vapid.
We call them PBDs, pretty but dumb.
Pretty but dumb, yeah. PBD and J. So I went with an actor who is in the first Expendables. He's in a movie from 2010 called The Last Song. He's also in pretty much all of the Hunger Games movies. I went with Liam Hemsworth.
Nice. I shopped him on this one, too.
Wow. I'm liking that.
A little bit. A little bit. You know, I like to go with my face value picks.
Kim.
Yeah. So, yeah, this is another one that's really a solid movie from the 80s mm-hmm. that if people haven't checked it out, they need to go back and watch.
I got to say, I love Steve Martin.
Oh, he's great.
I grew up on Steve Martin. I was, you know, a child of the 70s, mm-hmm. so I was very familiar with Steve Martin through the SNL years when he would guest on. And he was the wild and crazy guy. Mm-hmm. And he'd do the banjo and he had the arrow through. And there was a lot of silly things that as a kid I could identify with. But he's so smart, so clever, such a great writer. If you've, and I've mentioned this on the show before as a check-in, the show that he does with Martin Short that was filmed in Greenville.
Yeah.
So good.
The stage show, which he was supposed to have done in Raleigh, and it's been canceled for some reason. I wanted to go see it, but he's fantastic. And this is a great example of his many talents beyond just being a comedian and a funny guy.
Yeah. So he has tinnitus. That's where your ears ring, right? Mm-hmm. And it's from the gun firing scenes in The Three Amigos, speaking of Martin Short and Steve Martin collaborating.
Wow. I didn't realize that.
Yeah, and he's still a musician.
Yep.
Even though he has constant ringing in his ears, he says either you get used to it or you go insane. You know, so I'm not sure which happened to
him. I didn't learn until this week that he and Edie Brickell have produced two albums together.
Yep. Mm-hmm. In addition to the stuff he's done solo with the Steep Canyon Rangers.
Mm-hmm. I was going to say Rocky Bottom
I considered...
Boys.
Steep
Canyon Rangers, Rocky
the Soggy Bottom
Boys.
I considered casting a bluegrass musician.
Oh, that would have been really funny.
In this role. But instead, I went with Glenn Howerton.
Before we jump into our final segment,
okay.
I have opened... another semi-themed beer. It's called Lurker in the Deep,
mm-hmm.
which is what you could consider a mermaid. This is from Edmunds Oast. This is a bit of a treat if you haven't had it.
It's either that or a shy person on the dark web.
Yes. This is a bourbon barrel-aged imperial stout
mm-hmm.
From our friends in Charleston.
I'm glad we saved it for last.
Yeah, it's a big boy beer, and you know it's special because it has a wax seal on it, so...
They waxed on, we waxed off.
That's right. Oh, there's a stretch.
That joke, it was kind of a stretch.
There you go.
All right, so let me taste this real quick. It looks very dark and thick. Just like I like my women. All right, so.
Ooh, Michelle's going to have something to say.
My lovely wife, Michelle, is well aware of that. Our final segment of the night. We've been having fun recently doing these battle royales, a hypothetical fight to the death between various people. And Sean, tell us who we're going to pit against Daryl Hannah in this battle royale.
Our choices are Daryl Hannah versus Daryl Hammond, man of 1,000 voices of SNL fame,
mm-hmm.
or Daryl and my other brother Daryl.
From Newhart. Okay, so that's a funny bit that our under 25 listeners are completely lost on. But there's a guy named Bob Newhart.
He's amazing.
He's still with us. Did you know that? He's 87.
Yes, he is.
All right, Chelsea talk about Bob Newhart for a second.
I love Bob Newhart more than everything.
Uh-huh.
My mom.
Bob Newhart or your son? Go.
Oh, that's so hard.
He doesn't listen to this. It's okay.
Yeah.
Bob Newhart, that is.
I fell in love with him when he had the Bob Newhart show,
mm-hmm.
where he was a psychiatrist.
Right.
And it used to come on Nick at Night, and they sang the theme song to the Bob Newhart show, just using Bob Newhart's name. And my mom has like a video somewhere of me, like as a little girl singing.
That's
this.
Hilarious.
I have his autograph.
Wow.
I know.
So
it's my most prized
I was
possession.
Not as familiar with the Bob Newhart show as I was with the show Newhart.
Right. We grew up with that.
Where he...
Oh, that's a great show, too.
Long running, too. Like
Peter Scolari, Julia Duffy. Mm-hmm.
And so he's an inn owner. He owns a...
In Vermont.
And he and his wife have moved up there from New York City to, you know, get away from the hustle and bustle. But the my brother Daryl and my other brother Daryl that you're referring to, one of the local townspeople is a guy named Larry.
Yes.
And he always has his two backwoods brothers with him. And I don't care if they're in Vermont, they are rednecks.
Yes.
And they're my brother Daryl and my other brother Daryl. So my brother Daryl was played by a guy named Tony Pappenfuss.
Is that like Cornbush?
It's a lot like Cornbush, but it's real this time. Tony Pappenfuss. And then my other brother Daryl was played by John Voldstadt. John Voldstadt and Tony Pappenfuss. I think that's probably why they just called them both Daryl. It's a lot easier to remember.
Right.
So they're going to be the Daryl tag team that's going up against Daryl Hannah and Daryl Hammond. You rejected my earlier lineup.
Oh, I didn't reject it. I just, those
this,
came
this
to my mind.
This is pretty funny. My original idea was Daryl Hannah versus Hannah Storm versus Stormy Daniels. So I thought that would have been fun too, but we're going with this. We're going with this. So Chelsea, give us your idea. Who's going to...
No contest.
No contest?
Daryl and my other brother, Daryl.
Because they're not going to get to fight at the same time.
It'll be tag team rules, though.
Yeah, so they can each of them can only fight at once. And they're pretty drunk.
No, because of their association with Bob Newhart, they have to win.
Gotcha. All right. Sean, how are you feeling on this one?
I don't know. I mean, with Daryl Hammond, he could fool you with all of his different voices.
And disguises.
Like you don't know who you're fighting.
So he has the second most number of seasons on SNL. He was recently surpassed this past year by guess who?
Keenan
Thompson.
Well, technically...
Also, second most number of characters performed on SNL after who? Keenan Thompson.
Keenan, okay. Well, technically, that's true if you consider him as a featured player, but Daryl Hammond replaced...
The announcer, after he died,
Don Pardo.
Don Pardo, correct.
So he's still with the show, but
that's not technically a cast
correct,
member.
Correct, correct.
Yeah. And also, it's considering continuous seasons. He left the show and then came back
to be
the announcer.
So yeah, I'm... but then again, you got Daryl Hannah with that sword.
Mm-hmm.
Wait, she didn't have a sword, though. What was her weapon of choice?
She could have weapons.
She had an eye patch.
Well, that is pretty badass. I'm going to stick with Hammond, though.
All right.
Boo.
Well, he does the Sean Connery.
I don't care.
All right. So since you guys went with Daryl and Daryl and then Daryl Hammond, I'm going to throw all my eggs into the Daryl Hannah basket.
Okay.
Because it's her fucking birthday.
Awesome.
And she's just got married. She's a newlywed. She's feeling like she's back in the...
No.
The prime of her life.
She's feeling like Daryl Hannah Young. She's gonna channel that L Driver role and she's gonna whistle her way to a victory in this battle royale. However, Stormy Daniels is gonna jump over the ropes and get in there. And you know that she's definitely had to tackle some formidable
Well, given the events of this week, I don't know. Stormy Daniels probably has some good karma on her side.
Yes. All right. So we will go ahead and wrap up the show at this point.
Oh, yeah.
This has been a fun one. Happy birthday to Daryl Hannah.
See us anytime.
She heard and she says thank you. And we are going to wrap up the show. We want to thank the guests. Thank you, Chelsea, for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Is there anything that you want to plug for this time of year or anything in general?
Everybody should just watch Bob Newhart.
Just watch Bob Newhart, the person.
Yes.
Go about his daily business. He doesn't
Absolutely.
Have a show anymore.
Watch the old shows.
Yes.
He's phenomenal.
He really is. That deadpan delivery.
It's the best.
Classic.
I love it.
I've got a legit plug.
Okay.
At the brewery, seminarbrewing.com. We are finally releasing the first of the bourbon barrel aged mug stouts on Saturday the
8th.
8th, is that right?
That's coming up pretty quick. That's about a week away.
There will be 24 ounce crowlers prepackaged.
Oh, wow.
Like $20 a can. These are Buffalo Trace barrel aged for about a year.
Didn't you say that was Daryl Hannah's birthday, the 8th?
No. Her birthday is December 3rd.
Oh, I thought you said the 8th.
Nope. Pretty well, good. An 8 is like 2 3s kissing.
That's a good point.
Yeah. All right. So I also want to plug the podcast itself. Listeners, whatever you're listening to us on, please rate, review, and subscribe. We're on iTunes. We're on Spotify. You can listen to us natively on our hosting site, Podbean. Just search for Cinema Chop Shop. We're on the social media. We've got a Twitter page. It's at Cinema Chop Shop. We're also on Facebook, Cinema Chop Shop, on there as well. And then our email address is cinemachopshop@gmail.com. And even though I'm about a week behind on the beer check-ins, we like to literally check in the beers we drink here on the show on Untappd. That's Untappd. We are Cinema Chop Shop on there as well. Thank you to Sean, the engineer, my co-host and co-producer. Thank you for doing what you do.
My pleasure.
And what is next week?
The films of John Malkovich.
Malkovich. So that'll be fun. And so,
do you want to tease the end of the year?
Andrew, yeah. Our New Year's Eve movies episode. We're gonna have special returning Hall of Fame guest Andrew Tay, the Canadian in your brain again. He's gonna be back in Flowtown, getting dropped in the dirty South, and we're gonna have him here in the studio. He's gonna rap for a little bit with us. Literally, he's been practicing his hip hop up in Canada, and we're talking about some New Year's Eve movies that night. So it'll be really cool to have him back on.
Yes.
And hopefully he can show us how Skype works and then we can have him on in the future. The future, Marty! All right. So thank you, listeners. Thank you for listening to this show and any others in the past and future. And please remember to watch, chop,
retrofit, and tip your bartenders.
And watch behind your ears.
Oh, God. That shit's gross.